This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by Jacob Emerson. Jacob's a brilliant journalist who leads up writing about payers in the commercial payer industry and more at Becker's Healthcare. He always shares with us interesting insights on stories he's watching. Jacob, let me ask you to take it away. Tell us a couple of stories that you're following currently in sort of the payer world.
Yes, sir. So there's been some really big developments in the startup insurance space the last few weeks. And, you know, this is something you and I have talked about before, Scott, but we've seen some of the cracks start to form last year with some of these companies, which colloquially, I think, are usually referred to as insurtechs within the industry. But the first dominoes have started to fall with some states moving to take direct financial control of companies like Bright Health and Friday Health Plans. And I should be very clear that this is state insurance departments taking control of state subsidiaries, not taking control of the holding parent companies that still exist. So just right off the bat, we got Bright Health subsidiaries in Tennessee and Florida. They're now being financially supervised by the insurance regulators in each state. They've actually been being supervised since last fall, but the states only publicly shared that information this month. And really, that just means that Bright is now banned from spending more than $10,000 on anything without the state's approval. The states can act on the company's behalf in terms of business dealings. Essentially, Bright has lost all financial autonomy within Tennessee and Florida. So really interesting to see this happen.
Yeah, and what drives that? What's the set of events that leads to the state insurance authority sort of taking over? What leads to that?
Yeah, definitely. So each state is different, and they all have different state laws in terms of what they're looking for or what their local courts are looking for. But like I mentioned, we've seen the signs of this coming for months. At last year, Bright, which is based out of Minneapolis, they reported a net loss of $1.4 billion, and they ended their insurance business entirely within the ACA markets. They ended Medicare Advantage outside of California. And then in their earnings call in March for the fourth quarter, they said they need to raise about $300 million to stay afloat after overdrafting their credits. But the reason, you know, state insurance regulators get involved here is because there's real members that need health coverage that they either no longer, that the states view as being threatened because of financial issues. So Bright ended last year with 1 million commercial members across the country. They had 125,000 Medicare Advantage members and then 530,000 consumers under value-based arrangements. So essentially, the states have said, you are not financially capable of taking care of these members' health coverage, so we're now going to completely take over your company's finances. But there's a lot of big questions in terms of what happens next here. I've talked to some payer consultants on this issue, and they basically say that our state-by-state insurance regulatory environment is just not set up for these private equity-backed startups that lose hundreds of millions, even billions of dollars in their first few years, and then eventually no longer able to keep operating and paying claims.
And it's very complicated because starting an insurance business is very, very expensive, and I think they probably expect to have significant losses in the first couple of years as they try and grow a membership base. And it's so much, as I hear you talk about these smaller insurance companies going broke, it reminds one of smaller banks going broke and what that leads to. But it very much leads to more and more movement to the larger and larger banks, or in this case, the larger and larger insurance companies that probably could feel safer to an enrolling. And so, for example, at the end of the day, as these small startup insurance companies go broke, this plays positively to the hands of the Cignas, the Aetnas, the Blue Crosses, the Uniteds, just like the smaller regional banks going broke means Bank of America and JP Morgan seem to just get bigger and bigger. I mean, sort of a fascinating, there's some fascinating similarities, and it's similar that the government has to bail out these players that don't have the solvency to meet the obligations they have to consumers who are members of their plan, is what it sounds like.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely correct, Scott. There are some benefits here for payers who have members they could gain, and there are a number of parallels to the banking collapse situation that we've seen these last few weeks. But let me just one last example, and this is actually the biggest one. This happened this past Thursday on March 23rd. Texas has moved to completely shut down Friday health plans in the state, and they've started liquidation proceedings and the seizing of assets. And so this is a Colorado-based company. They were founded in 2015, and they sold ACA plans in seven states, and they had 330,000 members as of last year. And then last fall, Texas asked them to leave the state's ACA marketplace for this year because they recorded a $240 million shortfall specifically in Texas alone. But they are still operating in five states. So that'll be interesting. But to your point, Scott, this affects all of healthcare, because to have an active insurance license in Texas and many other states, you have to pay into a fund that will pay claims if an insurance company is ever liquidated. So if Friday has remaining claims to be paid in Texas, which it doesn't sound like there's a lot, but if there are, that money has to come from other payers. So this affects everybody in some way, shape, or form.
So 100%, and it does lead to so many different questions. One is, I mean, I say it somewhat facetiously, when you name your health plan Friday, it leads to so many jokes when things go badly. Like, oh, will they be open on Friday? Will they not? Are they closing on Thursday? What are they doing? And so you almost feel like bad for them at the end of the day when they pick a name that's so subject to so many easy jokes when things go poorly, and that's not here nor there. But it is fascinating, because it does lead one to further reflect on, you know, all these health systems over the years, so many health systems over the years who try to start insurance plans. Some have thrived with them, and I would say that's a relatively small percentage. Many have found that it's a much tougher business than they expected, and have ended up going, you know, out of business, at least in the insurance business, and some huge systems taking massive losses after they experimented with being in the insurance business. But it is fascinating to see what it does lead to. And we talk so much about CVS and United Health Group being the fourth and largest companies in America, and, you know, sort of in the insurance perspective, they cover so much just general commercial business, Medicare Advantage business, Medicaid Advantage business, and so much more that almost right. Like J.P. Morgan and B of A, they become too big to fail. They also, as they become so big, even though they cover so many people, also become, you know, the parties that people love to hate. So people sort of cheer for these startup insurance companies just as a ballast against these mega plans. But at the end of the day, it seems like, hopefully we'll have an active marketplace where there's both these mega plans and some smaller plans too. And we'll see if that remains the beginning.
Yeah. Very interesting to watch. But just to conclude on this point, Scott, you know, a lot of these startups are being run by veteran insurance executives. So Friday's CEO is Humana's former president of group and specialty benefits. Bright was founded by a former United Healthcare CEO, and then Oscar Health, which we didn't mention them, but they've never turned a profit since their founding in 2012. Their new CEO, announced literally yesterday, is Aetna's former CEO, Mark Bertolini, who of course sold Aetna to CVS. So these companies are run by insurance veterans, but at the end of the day, they don't turn profits, and they simply hemorrhage investors' money.
Right. I do think Bertolini is one of the brightest guys in the business. And when he put together the CVS Aetna deal, everybody sort of scoffed at it and ended up being crazily successful. I think it shouldn't be understated that there's no insurance company that starts up that doesn't expect to have losses in the first few years as they try and grow a population of business. I mean, that's part of the game plan, is grow enough membership that they can get the economies of scale. So there's so much technology, there's so much other stuff that's needed to get an insurance plan. You just can't do it with a certain base number of members. And they all recognize the first couple of years to get business, they're going to have to sell business to employers and to consumers at a bit lower price than United or Blue Cross, because who would sign up with you if your prices are the same as United Blue Cross? And then second is they have to get providers in the network. And that's very hard to do, because who wants to bother being a provider in the network unless you've got enough business to make it worthwhile for them? So it's a tough business to build a foothold in, and it's
very tough.
You know, it's losing money the first few years. It doesn't bother or not bother me, but I don't view it as negative. It's just a matter of the scale of the money and the plan to get it, and are they directionally in the right direction to be successful? But it sounds like so many of these things are not. So we'll see how it plays through. They're not done, but it's a hard business to run at a smaller scale and to start up today. It's a very tough business.
Yeah, I agree with you. And then, you know, another issue that I thought we could briefly talk about, Scott, and I say this because it's very, very timely right now. On Friday, the nation's continuous Medicaid enrollment comes to an end, and that's been in place for 3 years, and that's going to affect payers and hospitals greatly financially. You know, and I've spoke to hospital CEOs asking them, what's your biggest concern at the end of the PHE? And, you know, it's a little bit decoupled now, but their biggest concern is the end of this Medicaid enrollment. It presents them with millions of potentially uninsured patients over the next year or so. So it's a really big deal that we're watching going into this weekend.
Fascinating. People have talked about that a lot, and now it's actually happening. And you're right. Yeah. We've heard lots of health system leadership concerned that this is going to mean more patients that are uninsured, not have coverage, and that they'll still have to take care of them, of course, and want to take care of them, but won't get paid for doing so unless those patients get coverage under an ACA plan. But we all know, as easy right. as it might sound theoretically to get coverage, to move coverage, in practice, it's very challenging to move from place to place for your coverage.
And very challenging. And the estimates right now are anywhere from 15 to 18 million people are going to be losing coverage, depending on the source. But it's not just hospitals. Those are a lot of these people are private insurance companies members that they manage the care of these Medicaid members on behalf of the states. So it's private insurance customers, and then it's potentially uninsured patients for hospitals. So just a massive issue. Again, that's coming to an end this week.
Just fascinating. The numbers in that are astounding. I mean, those are astonishing numbers, 15 million. So let's hope it's not that many, because that's a scary number in terms of going back to the amount of people that will be uninsured in our country. We finally got the uninsured down to 7, 8, 9% or so. Someplace in there, depends what data is and what estimate
8%.
But having that go in the wrong direction would be an absolutely horrible thing to see happen. Jacob, I want to thank you as always for joining us on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. What a pleasure to visit with you. Just fascinating. Thank you very, very much.
Yeah, you as well, Scott. Have a good one.